So I thought I might as well just brag a little. You can see that I've used the media wherever possible in the past, and that's one of the questions that came up, because you guys know that my intention for this year is to get as much media as we can. And at this very moment, I'm feeling like if I don't get on the phone to A Current Affair and some of those people and see if I can't get a spot, the opportunity is going to be gone. So I know they're already covering the back from Christmas financial blues kind of stuff. And then we'll get to be a point where they just go, it's not the hot topic now. So, as you know, before Christmas I offered to do a refresher course, and a number of people put their hand up, and it was kind of tight for time, but I figured we need to do it now or it's just not going to work. There were some people who put their hand up and then disappeared, which kind of caused me some grief and frustration, but I just accepted that. And I said, okay, well, after the conference, I'll offer another one, which I will do, maybe even like this, had to be this coming week. But I need to get onto Current Affair if I can as soon as possible. So I may even, in fact, what I need to do is take the people who I know haven't got customers or haven't had recent customers, like in the last year, to take them off the website for a time being until they've done the refresher course and I know that they know what they're talking about. So, but somebody asked the question in the question box yesterday, I'll find the question and read it out. Something about I won't find it because I'm looking for it. But basically, how are you guys going to be included in the me getting media? So everything that I do, if I get any media, I mean, it's no guarantees with media. It's like you make a phone call, you send an email, and you hope that you get someone wants to listen to you. What you get, you don't really get to say what it's going to be like completely. It's going to be their flavour on what it is. But my intention will be everything I do and say will be pointing at finderspendingplanner.com.au. .com, forget the au. It's all about everything I do will be trying to point at you guys. Now, if they decide to put a different slant on it than that, I've got no control over that. It will be what it will be. But everything I do will be based on trying to get spending planners out there and people knowing that we exist and what we do. And I might absolutely get nothing, I might get lots. But you can see I have had some success in the past, and thank you, Anthony, or wherever Anthony's gone. We started with the radio thing, and it's ABC, I can't advertise, but I'm sure there'll be opportunities for me to sort of slip in little snippets that give people enough information to go looking and finding. So I think you guys picked up on all of the words that I have given you so far all start with the letter E. So they are my biggies. Okay? These are the biggies that will impact on people's financial direction, and actually if you stop and think about it, they're going to impact on your business direction. They are critical words that if you look at them and concentrate and think, okay, what does this mean for me? They're really key words. So let's go through them quickly because I want to leave some time to do the panel thing. So the first one was emotions. And what you need to understand is that nobody does anything without an emotion being involved. You'll go and flick the lights on because you're annoyed because you can't read in the dark. You'll go and have food because you're annoyed because you're feeling pain in the tummy that says you're hungry. I mean, there are things that we all do by habit, but outside of that, everything we do is driven by an emotion. Okay, going to work is probably a habit. Getting annoyed with the driver in the lane next door makes you to crash into them. I mean, everything's driven by emotion, and emotional decisions are financial decisions, and vice versa, because money gets involved. So if you were to draw a line on your piece of paper and write the word emotional on one end, that's actually a suggestion. If the decisions that you make, and they're not necessarily all financial decisions, are emotional, at the other end of that line, what word would we be put in to say, well, okay, I'm not making emotional decisions, I'm making logical or rational decisions. And I want you to put a little mark on that line that says where you think you sit between emotional and logical for making money decisions. This would be a great exercise to do with a client across the coffee shop table, wouldn't it? They probably never even thought of this, but it's pretty obvious stuff when you make it obvious. So you all put a mark? Hand up all those people that have got their mark down here. Down that end there. Okay, all the people who have got their little mark up here. And then the rest of us are somewhere in between. Have you actually, did you think to myself, well, hang on a second, this is a loaded question, because when it's shoes, it's down here, and when it's food, it's up here. Like, you need to break it down, because, you know, there are some things where you spend money where it's just, oh, I'm doing this because I have to. Whereas, when it gets to your hobby or your passion, like for me, it's collecting old motorbikes and restoring them, I'm way down this end when it comes to making choices around money there. When it comes to buying shoes or clothes and stuff, my wife does that for me. I'm way up here. Okay? So that's the first aha, is that you go, okay, you can't actually put a mark on that line and say, this is where I sit when it comes to making money decisions. So I asked you to do something that really wasn't possible, because it depends what money. And so you need to identify with your clients, what are the things that get you really, you know, where are your passions? So to find out where the dangers are. And then what you want to try and allocate is some money towards those things in a separate account where, okay, we'll put $20 a week into this account that's your shoes money, your power tools money, your whatever the emotional thing might be. So that they know that they've got that there, but it's measured. All right, I need to keep moving, but there's a lot in that. There are two kinds of debt, and we sort of talked about good debt and bad debt. Here's another one, stupid debt. Emotions is the basic cause of stupid debt. And there are some people who would not be seen dead unless they were wearing clothes that had a Gucci label, you know, and therefore paying $50 for a shirt when they could go to Target and wear a $10 shirt, but they just couldn't possibly bear the thought of someone seeing the bullseye on their label. That's a dumb emotional decision. But you can't tell your client that's a dumb decision. You might think it, but you can't tell them that. So how do you work with people who you know have the tendency to make emotional financial decisions? Well, I work on rules. And I put chocolate there because some of us get tempted to eat chocolate even when we set our rules we're not going to eat it. But it could be a simple rule like, I can buy anything at all that I see on a spur of the moment, so long as it's not more than $50, or $20, or $100, or whatever. The rule is, if it's more than that, I have to walk away, but I can come back tomorrow and buy it. So that gives them some cooling off time. That's just an example of a rule. Rules break the emotional cycle. But people have to buy into it, and you've got to sell to them that this could actually help you. I'm not saying you can't have this thing, but let's put a rule in place. Or, you know, what do you think of the idea of having a rule that says, every time I realise that I'm in the emotional end of my line, that I need to just walk away, I'm coming back tomorrow. Absolutely, I'm coming back tomorrow to get it. That gets rid of the, oh, I've had to go without feeling. But it gives them time to go, do I really care? You know, is it worth getting in the car and driving back to the shops to go and make that purchase? So that's just a quickie on how to sort of deal with that big E, which is probably one of the biggest big E's. The next one is environment. So who you hang around with, where you hang around, where you go has a major impact on your wealth. So if you hang out at the pub, probably not a great environment. If you hang out with a bunch of spending planners all weekend, that's probably a great environment. They say birds of a feather flock together. That's basically what that's saying, isn't it? You know, you hang around with people like you. And you've probably heard it said that if you were to take somebody and look at the income of their 10 closest friends, add it up and divide by 10, that's their income. Because we hang around with people like us. So therefore, if you got rid of all of your friends and went and got new friends and had twice your income should... And in fact, that actually... But no one's going to do it because you're not going to sack your friends. But you should gravitate towards people who earn more than you, who are more successful than you, because success rubs off. Okay? So your environment will determine who you rub shoulders with every day. Look for three types of people. Role models, and maybe you never get to rub shoulders with Robert Kiyosaki as an example, or Richard Branson, but you can read their books. And you can get to know a bit about them by reading and studying what they do. Experts, once again, who are the experts in the fields, role model experts, and a coach or a mentor. And that's actually what you do for your clients, isn't it? You actually give them the environment where they have a mentor and a coach all rolled into one for their spending habits. The next biggie, because I've got to keep moving, is education. Okay? You notice I didn't put that first. In fact, I probably would have felt like putting it almost last, because most of the wealthiest people on this planet flunked out of primary school. If you actually go and investigate it, you find the wealthiest people have got the least education. And if you read Rich Dad Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki goes to great lengths to say how his highly educated dad had money troubles all his life, but his mate's dad, who flunked out, was extremely wealthy. Yes, Lance?
Robert Kiyosaki's first book was, "If you want to be happy and rich, don't go to school.
Yes.
Because there is a difference between schooling and education.
Well, because at school they teach you not to make mistakes. And we already know from the conversations we've had that you learn from your mistakes. You have to make mistakes. Just before I was talking here with Paul and Kent, and I said, I made something like, in the space of 3 months, I made 80 appointments with mortgage brokers, financial planners and accountants when I was just getting started. And for the first 50 of them, I sat down and started telling them all about what I did, and I never even gave them an opportunity to speak. I eventually woke up to what I was doing wrong, because it was like, you need to sit down and go, tell us about your business. You want to learn all you can about them and their business and their needs and their problems, and then you can be thinking, oh, okay, I can probably help you with that. But if you don't listen first and you just blurt all over someone, good luck. Because I learned the hard way. I blew about 50 appointments before I worked out what I was doing wrong. Okay? So education. That's probably appropriate, isn't it? A blank screen. So I'm just going to put up a bunch of questions. There's so many questions that we don't know the answers to, and if you think that you're ever going to be able to answer all those questions, good luck, forget it. That's why we have the expert down here. That, you know, these people have done the courses, they've got the qualification. You don't need to be the accountant, you don't need to be the mortgage broker, you don't need to be... There are other people that do that, specialise in your area and do what you do. So how much did you learn at school about money or business?
Zero.
Let's do some finger exercises. Finger exercises. See if you can get the tip of your thumbs to touch the tip of your first finger. Hold them up. How much did you learn at school about money? Diddly squat. We all know that knowledge gives power. If you know what Kent put up on the board there can be done, suddenly that's a strategy that you can use. But if you don't know about it, you'll just go to work and pay a mortgage. Good luck with that. Whereas there's some knowledge that you just gained this morning. Maybe it was just like a glimmer of how it all works together, but you could go to Kent or another financial planner or someone and go, I want to do this. And suddenly the knowledge gives you power. If you don't know the rules, you can't play the game. It's that simple. And it's exactly the same in sport as it is with money and anything else for that matter. So knowledge gives power. Where do you get the knowledge? Well, books, seminars, internet, mentors, professionals, clubs, role models, experiments, ask, spending planners. This is bad, isn't it?
No, you're right.
I'm just in somebody's way all the time.
No, you're good.
So, pick something that you love and become the expert. What did I do 23 years ago? I discovered this was something I love so much, I just love the goosebumps, this is what I wanted to do. I'm hoping that you guys have decided this is the thing that you love, that you want to be the expert at. Most people fail because they keep changing channels. Who's ever had, you know, I'm going to be this, and then a year later, they go, oh, that's not working for me, and they go off and do something else, and then a year later, they go, oh, that's not really working for me, and keep changing channels. That's not the recipe for success. All right, the next one, your ego and your self-esteem, they're both E words. If you kind of get up in the morning and you go, oh, I'm no good, what's the chance of you being a success?
Zero.
How would you have felt, like that first slide that I put up with me and all of those snippets from current affairs, all the radio and TV and stuff that I've done? Was I bragging?
Sure.
I'm just proud of what I've done. I've got lots more to do, but I wouldn't say that I'm on myself or up myself or whatever. I've got an ego and I'm proud of who I am. There's a lot more that I want to do. There's things I'm not proud of, but there's things that I am proud of. But you need to think, well, you know what? I've actually got something valid to offer somebody and it's of so much value to them, I need to treat myself as if I'm worth a worthwhile human being and put myself out there. If you've got low self-esteem, you will avoid taking action because you'll be afraid that people will laugh at you, that you might fail, or you'll just prove to yourself that you're actually right thinking that you're no good. And it's just a vicious circle. Whereas if you've got high self-esteem, you won't be worried about what people think about you because you'll just go and take action. And who cares? You know, people can laugh all they like, but you know you're okay. No action, no growth. It's that simple. It's what Casey was talking about yesterday about being out of your comfort zone, isn't it? If you don't have the ego, just go and pretend you've got it and fake it till you make it. All right. I'd like to just quickly tell you about Mary the babysitter. I've changed the name to protect the innocent, but probably about 15 or 16, maybe 17 years ago, Kent and I and another a mortgage broker, it wasn't Paul, every Wednesday afternoon in Brisbane for an hour on the way home we'd have this thing we called Budget School, which is one of the steps along the journey that I've been on. And there was a bunch of people signed up to come along to that, and there was one lady. It didn't matter how hard I tried, I could not get her budget to work. And it always basically came back to the fact that she was earning 15 grand a year. And I said to her, what is it that you do that you earn such a little income? And she said, oh, I'm a babysitter. I said, oh, really? I said, so how long have you been doing that? She said, oh, 25 years. I said, you're a babysitter. You are supermanny. But how much an hour do you charge? It was like $10 or $12 or something. I said, so I know now why you're not earning any money, because your belief in yourself is way down here. You don't ask for anything because you don't think that you're worth anything, and that's why your life is where it is. And I tried to get through to her that there were so many high paid, like 300 grand a year CEOs who had their kids in daycare and felt guilty about not getting home till 6 and 7 o'clock at night, who would have been happy to pay 50 or 60 bucks an hour to have super nanny looking after the kids, so they felt good about the fact that they had super nanny looking after their kids. But the problem was in here, between the ears. She needed a checkup from the neck up. When you go and look in the mirror, that's where your problems are. And her problem was she just had absolutely no belief in herself, no ego, and she was just like, oh, I'm a babysitter. I've just been doing it for 25 years. And I'm thinking, anybody that can do that for 25 years must know so much about babysitting. You are supernatural. I could not get through to her because her ego was the thing that was holding her back all the time. Big E number 5, expectations. It's pretty true that you get what you expect to get. What you expect influences what you accept from people. So if you expect someone to give you a hard time, you'll accept it from them when they give it to you. Does that make sense? What you accept determines what you get. If you say to somebody, that's not acceptable, I'm not going to accept that, well then you won't get it. You know, if your wife or your husband keeps nagging at you and you let them do it, well then it happens. But if you draw a line in the sand and say, no, you know what? I don't expect to be treated that way, I'm not going to accept that. Okay, your outer world reflects your inner world. You get what you expect. So that's something that some of you might need to think about. What do you expect to happen in the next year? So before we leave today, we need to think really seriously about what you expect the next year to look like, because that's going to actually determine what it actually does look like. Right, the next one, and this is what everybody thinks they've got to, this is the one that will make me rich. I've just got to earn more money. And everyone in the room knows that that's not the truth. Because the fact is that no number of pay rises will satisfy your need for more money. It will never go away. And if I actually pull out my magic wand and wave it right now, your income just got doubled, guys. How do you feel? It was on zero. Nothing changed. Nothing changed. But for every other, for the rest of us, it should be pretty exciting, because now you've got double the income. The question I've got for you, though, is how long do you think that feeling will last? Your income just doubled. I mean, I want you to seriously consider this.
Stats say about 3 months.
You know what? That's what everybody tells me. I've been asking that question in rooms across the world for about the last 15 years, and I expected people to say, well, about a year, and the most common answer I got was 3 months. And that tells you that our cost of living is determined by our income. People know it, and yet they still think, I've just got to go and earn more money. I've just got to go and earn more money. The fact of the matter is, going and earning more money will just make their life cost more. And until you guys get in their face and actually show them how to do a spending plan, it ain't going to change. Every person in the world could easily spend more money than they earn. No number of pay rises is ever going to satisfy your need for more money. Okay. The fact is that you can become wealthy on a low income and you can go broke on a high income. In your suburb, probably in your street, there are people who earn more than you, who are doing worse than you, and there are people who earn less than you who are doing better. Okay? Biggie number 7, expenditure. So this is what we're talking about, budgeting, isn't it? Or, sorry, spending planning. Well, that doesn't seem to matter, does it, Sam? Because budgeting works fine for you. Why is managing our expenditure so hard? Any clues? Do we go right back to what was my first big E?
Education.
Yeah? Ooh, okay, but what was the number one?
Emotions.
Because money is just, and we're all emotional. If we weren't, you imagine what we'd be like if God hadn't gifted us with the gift of emotions. You know, what would we be like? It'd be pretty bad. So we've got to realise what emotions are. They're a great thing, but we've got to, you know, and money and emotions are tied together. So problem solving 101, if you know what a problem is, it's much easier to find a solution. Would you agree? If you were a researcher trying to find a cure to cancer, you could say, oh, well, let's put some acid or some chemicals on it and try and kill it or chop it out. Or you could go, hang on a second, why does it start in the first place? If you know what the problem is, you don't even need to do the poisoning or whatever. Chopping out. So knowing what the problem is it's much easier to find a solution. So when it comes to managing your day-to-day finances and spending money, what's the problem?
Too much is going out compared to what's coming in.
Well, that's, okay, that sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? What's the problem?
Don't have a plan.
Don't have a plan. There's lots of answers here, guys. What's coming to your head? If you don't even have a clue as to why people have trouble with money, I need to sack you and send you back to Spending Planner School 101.
They're not interested, it's too hard.
Not interested, too hard.
Too emotional.
Too emotional, not organised. I don't want to be restricted. I tried a budget once and didn't like it. They don't want to own their issues. There are so many reasons, but for me, and this is where you guys really need to come, this is where you come in here. The mother of all money problems, it's so simple to identify and articulate to people. The mother of all money problems is that we make financial decisions, if not every day, certainly on a very regular basis. For some people it's more than once a day, for others it may be once or twice a week. But the issue is that we blindly accept that we'll find out in the future whether we made the right decision today or not. People don't even think about that because they left school, they started earning money, they spent money because they earn it, and then they go and earn more money, spend more money, and they're not even thinking when they stuff up, Why did I stuff up? What was the problem? What made this happen? And every person that stuffs up with money was trying to get it right. Would you agree with me? Who's ever met somebody who deliberately got into trouble with money? It wasn't even me. Nobody. And yet 80% of the population is stressed about money all the time. So there's a real conundrum there, if you want. And it basically comes down to the fact that we're all trying hard to get it right, but we don't know what right looks like. And we just accept that that's just how it is because we've never seen anything else. We try hard, but you know, we all want to spend as much of our money as we can because we want to have the best ride through life. But we kind of know that we should save and we, you know, for the future. But you know, I just saw that dress or that cordless drill or that car or that surfboard or, you know, or whatever it might be. And it's kind of like there's all these emotions get involved and stuff happens. And we're trying hard to get it right, but it's so confusing. Does this look like a problem? It's the mother of all problems. So, with a spending plan, suddenly the problem's disappeared because you actually know what the future looks like and whether you can spend the money today and not have a problem in the future. It's that simple. And yes, there are other reasons. I mean, people can buy a house and then the market can crash and suddenly they're $100,000 upside down. No number of spending plans on the planet will stop that sort of stuff from happening. But this gets right. What we're doing is at the grassroots, base level stuff. And yes, other bad things can happen. But that's why we've got more E's to come, because we'll address them then. Big E number 8, economising. You like my little cars I found on the internet? I like this one the best. There was an image I found with this, was actually an open top and two guys sitting there and the thing that had three wheels and it looked so perfect but I could not get it to come down. So economising. I will guarantee that most millionaires are budget conscious people and they watch every dollar. I think we have this impression that millionaires never have to worry about money again. But when money arrives by accident, it disappears by accident as well. When money arrives by accident, like you just won the lotto, it leaves by accident as well. I'm sure you've all heard the saying, waste not, want not. We all need to be frugal and make sure that the blood, sweat and tears that went into earning a dollar, what happened to that dollar was worth the blood, sweat and tears that went into it. And I see people who will just waste money and I think, you know, you worked 5 hours for that money and you just turned it into nothing. Always think about how many hours did that take to get that money after tax? Is what I'm exchanging it for value for blood, sweat and tears? And that's when you'll suddenly think economising is worth doing. Number 9, excuses. Ifs and buts. So I think we've touched on this a little bit, but you know, whoops, and easy. Too young, too old, too short, too tall, too fat, too skinny, wrong race, wrong religion, wrong family, wrong school, wrong place, wrong time, no money, too busy, too tired, blah, 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 unlucky. We've all got excuses. And yet every person, every successful person, and Casey put a whole bunch of them up on the screen here.
Can you steal my slide off my next page?
No, I had it before you, babe. Every successful person had an excuse they did not use. And there was Colonel Sanders. I mean, you think about the gold, the Australian swimming team. Who were the swimmers who were asthmatics? Kieran Perkins. He could have said, I can't win a gold medal because I've got asthma. I wouldn't even be able to breathe swimming. It was a reason to go and do it. You know, I've seen on the internet a guy playing a guitar with a pick between his toes because he had no arms. And the guitar's on the floor, he's doing chords with these toes and strumming with these toes. I mean, anybody can go, oh, no, I can't play the guitar because I've got no arms. It's just an excuse. It's a story. Number 10, external events. This is the GFCs and the things where everything goes upside down. I'm in a bad situation here, mate. Because every other time I've told this next bit, you went in the room. But in the year 2001... In the year 2001, my daughter Casey had gone off to Canada, chasing a boy.
Here's the story that I didn't tell you yesterday.
Am I allowed to tell it? Am I allowed to tell it?
Yeah.
And late July we got an email that said,
yeah.
Hang on a second, I might have a problem here.
An email.
We got an email from Casey that said,
don't cry, I'll cry. Do you have
I'm getting married on the 1st of September, would you like to come to the wedding? Now, suddenly, an external event was going to cause chaos in my family budget. Okay? I had to find 10 grand in a hurry to get Mum, Dad, and the other two kids to Canada for 3 weeks for the wedding. And the reason I'm telling this story is because we had a spending plan, or we called it a budget back then, our finances, our day-to-day finances were in order. And so having something that was a bit out of the box, an external event, suddenly come along at us from left field, it really wasn't a big problem. We were able to structure it in, you know, I think we borrowed some money and I put the repayments into the budget. And we were able to solve it. But if my finances had been total chaos and that happened, where would I have been? We may never have gone. Yeah. So, external events, if you've got a spending plan and everything's in order, that kind of stuff, you're so less vulnerable to it. Take control of what's controllable and the uncontrollable won't take you out of the game. So identify and control what's controllable and the uncontrollable won't take you out of the game. Biggie number 11, I had the experts here before. Go and ask experts. It's the quick way. You don't do it the slow way. Ask the experts, get expert advice. If you think expertise is expensive, backyard barbecue advice will cost you heaps more. You know, think about it. Think about it. Okay, biggie number 12, which I haven't given you, but this is the one that you guys forget all the others, because you're going to stuff up with all of them. But if you've got energy, enthusiasm, and I would have put the word passion there, but passion's not an E word, and these are my big E's, not my big P's. I've had a few of them. Energy and enthusiasm will take you through anything that gets in the way. You hit a roadblock, you go through it, under it, over it, left, right, around it, dissolve it, whatever. But without the passion, the energy, the enthusiasm, and the excitement, you'll be left short. But with that, it doesn't matter how many mistakes you make, how little expertise you've got that you're still working on, how anything else, it doesn't matter. Because Bree was saying before, if she's not pushing on, you know, like the excitement, the passion, the adrenaline, she's bored. And make mistakes along the way, hey, that's just part of it, but it's that energy that drives you that will make the difference. So you've got to find that. And the reason I had those three guys up here straight up yesterday morning was because I wanted to get you guys so inspired, so enthused, so like, you know, if I've never had the customer say that about me, now I really believe it's possible. And I so want that. That's where I want you to find the energy and the enthusiasm from. All right, and people are attracted to energy. I remember when I was a school teacher, there was one word that started with F that would get every kid in the school on the oval in under a minute. And it wasn't fire, it was fight. And a fight is full of energy and people are attracted to energy. So the more you're buzzing, the more you're vibrating, the more the passion and the energy and the enthusiasm you're showing, the more people will be attracted to you because there's something happening here. People are attracted to energy. So get excited and let it ooze out of you and people will come to you. Does that make sense? Just be excited, guys. And here's a bonus one, because I did say my 12 biggies, but I couldn't resist putting in the 13th one. This is a bonus. Experience. But experience usually stops you from making the dumb mistakes. Da-da-da-da. All right, hopefully, and that was a very quick journey through those. We could have delved deeply into a lot of those topics, but that was really all we had time for now. It's 10 to 12, and this session theoretically goes to 5 to 12. And then we have a 10-minute break, So I'm going to suggest that we steal a little bit of time from that break. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Can I get Carolyn and Bree and Sam at the front, please? Sorry? Timing for the rest of the day.
It's about another hour.
Casey's coming up next. And then... That's the end. Almost. Not 10.
Oh, I see. You've got
the whole keys to the kingdom now. Okay, so one question I got yesterday was, how do I help clients achieve goals that don't currently fit into their plans? Did Kent and Paul give us some insight into that?
Yep.
Is there anything that either of you guys would like to sort of throw into that?
How do I help... question? Sorry, a couple of people didn't hear the question.
How do I help clients achieve goals that don't currently fit in their plan? So this is, you know, we go through and we walk, crawl and run. And we've got all the run things and we want to do them now. So we go and get expert advice to find out if we can squeeze things around and change things and free up some cash flow.
I challenge them. I say to them, there's no goal that's impossible to achieve as long as you're willing to do what it takes to achieve it. So if your goal is to be a millionaire by whatever, with our property side of our business, we can show you how to do that. But it will mean that you'll have to sacrifice this, change that, give up that, or start something that's big, or whatever it is. We can give you a bit of a guide as to how to get what you want, but 9 times out of 10, most people aren't willing to do what it takes to get it. So we can give you the information to get what you want, but you've got to be willing to change or go through that growth to get it.
Cool.
So we don't tell them it's impossible ever.
Okay, Carolyn, anything to add to that? It's not an easy question to answer, I just...
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, you're looking at long-term savings, really, for their goals.
Yep.
So, and I've put in place with clients, separate accounts for their goal setting. And they just work towards them, and it's a slow process. Like Tani said yesterday, they have a 5-year plan.
Yep.
That's their goal, but it's a 5-year
plan. And they could have chosen a shorter one, but it was just...
Absolutely, yeah. But we looked at the time frame and what they wanted to achieve, and it's going to take us 5 years to get there. So.
And you're going to get people that will just go and get the boob job, even though, like Jenny, you... it wasn't Jenny. Didn't you have a client, or was it a tattoo?
It was my head. Yeah, it was a boob job.
And
no,
every bit of
tattoo.
Common sense said, don't do it.
I've got the tattoo lady.
You've got the tattoo lady.
Yeah.
Sam, anything to throw in there?
I do we are where we are with the spending plan, and then we look at what could be, because there's always stuff that they've got in there that doesn't need to be in there, that you can cut back on. So it depends how badly they want it, and if they're willing to cut back. Or I always say, whatever picture it is, whatever vision, this will be the worst it will ever be right now. There's only one way to go. So when they're crying, I get a lot of single mums and crying and stuff. And, I say, well, just be honest, and we lay it out bare, and that's the worst it will ever be.
The best is yet to come.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
All right.
So then you work from there.
This is a simple one. Best way to handle contract signing for interstate clients. Okay, now I know you've got a Luxembourg client. You'd all have clients interstate or international.
Yeah.
Is it a problem?
Not really.
No, just fine.
So give us some insight.
Email, Zoom.
Email, Zoom.
Yep.
You email them the sign-up documentation. In fact, if you go to the training manual, in there, basically, there are two strategies. And if you haven't got that, the latest training manual, go to the business centre. All the documentation is there.
With my client in Luxembourg, I did exactly the same as what I would have done, but the free coffee and chat was actually in her lunch break, which was half an hour because of the time difference.
Yep.
And it was like 8 till 8:30 in my evening, and by 8 she's just sat there eating a sandwich on the Skype thing, and we did it all. She said, send me the forms, and it took half an hour.
She filled in the form and sent it back?
Yeah. And then it was just the process then. So the half hour doesn't have to be in a coffee shop or, in Adelaide. It can be anywhere.
I just found the question I couldn't find before. When formal marketing advertising starts from the Institute, how will we be included and recognised?
Okay.
So I think I've answered that one. Do you recommend, this is the one that I really wanted you guys to address, do you recommend offering different levels of spending plan and services, for example, from client doing most of things themselves as opposed to you doing it for them? So I know you guys have all got more, well, I think you've all got more than one product offering and different pricing structures. Do you want to share, just each of you quickly? Or have you got a standard?
I forgot to touch on that. When I did my presentation, I was going to show you my advertising and my prices. We keep it really simple. We do $1,200 up front and then $88 after 6 months if you continue on.
$88 a month.
$88 a month. And if you want the payment option, it's 6 payments of $200. So it's very simple, very straightforward. Same thing again, after 6 months, it's $88. It's $1,200 either way you cut it. It makes, when we do the automation payments, very simple because it's always the same amount, it never changes. It's just predictable and simple. So that's how we do it.
Cool.
Carol? So can I just ask a tack on question to that? Do you set those $88 payments up from the start, the ones that you're continuing on?
And if we don't get written notice, it just flips straight into it.
And you don't, because I was talking to Carolyn about this before, you don't call them at the end of the 6 month period and say...
We're about to set up an email to do that because we found that a lot forget, and all of a sudden they're contacting us and saying,
why?
What's this?
Yeah.
I paid $1,200, what's this? Like, sign the paperwork, people read it. and it was in our advertising and, so we're about to set up an email probably at the 5 month mark because our strategy is not set up to want them longer than 6 months. Mm-hmm. So at the 5 months, saying if you want to give notice now. If not, within the next month, you're going to be getting the 88.
That's a good idea, sending an email
back.
Yeah.
I took on Bree's model when I saw it, and it's really, really clean. And I just simply had a conversation with the client towards the end, and I said, we're about to flip over to the next arrangement. Is that what you want to do, or do you want to just cut off? And people are really clear which way they want to go.
Yeah.
And I set up the $88 right at the beginning, assuming that they're going to go.
Yeah.
And everybody does.
Otherwise, you're going to have to remember to do it, huh?
Yeah. It's just simplicity. I mean, we did think about having levels and this and offer that for only that. But the simpler you can make it for somebody, the easier it is for them to make a decision. And we rarely meet with them once and we want a decision. So, just very simple. You want this one or this one? And they pick one and we go, okay, well, here's the paperwork for it. So.
And the 6 months is nice and clean too, 7 months.
Carolyn, what product offering, how do you offer your, what price?
Okay, so basically mine's $1,100 up front. I give them a 10% discount if they sign up and pay that on the spot. Or $500 and $100 a month for the 6 months. With the beyond the 6 months, I actually have an email that I send out and I chat with them at that 5 month mark and just say, hey guys, you're coming up to the end. I know we've still got a long way to go in what we're doing. I'm more than happy to continue working with you. That's going to be $80 a month. If you want to continue that, just let me know. And I actually get them to fill in that sign up form again for that extra $80 so that I've got that and then I'll set it up as a payment. I had initially not stopped that. I'd set it up as Jenny had said to us to set it up and not stop it. But then I had a client who rang in tears on month 7 and said, you took money out of my account and that was my food money and I can't feed my children. And I just apologised profusely because, and I don't think that's ethical. I really don't. That's just my opinion. But I now am very firm in just contacting them and having that email that I send out at the 5 month mark and just say, hey guys, this is where we're at.
Yep.
I'm a little bit more flexible in... if I know that a client desperately needs my help and they can't afford that $500 up front or the $100 a month, we'll work out a payment plan. And generally I'll extend it over a 12 month period and we'll have a 12 month program. So
have any of you guys ever done a freebie?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We were told at training not to do that, but yes. I never ever really was in favour of that because I did plenty of freebies.
No.
Did you get paid? Because I know Carolyn did a freebie and actually...
You met Crystal yesterday. I knew that Crystal couldn't pay me right at the beginning, and because she had 4 children under 10 at the time and they were really struggling. And I said to her, look, sweetie, you will be my first client. I'd just done my training in the November. This was in the December. I said, you will be my first client. I'm going to do this for you for free. And my mandate for you is that I want you to be my biggest spruiker. I want you to go out and spruik my business and tell people how wonderful I am after I've, you know. And also I used her as a bit of a guinea pig as well, because I said to her, I want you to tell me what I'm doing well, what I can improve, what you like about the program, what you don't like about the program. And so we worked together that way. So we did that. She didn't pay me. The second week that we'd started working with her, she was upstairs spruiking my business, and I got my second client anyway, which was a paying client, so that was fine. So she did her job really well. But that was in the November. In the June following, and she was my story of the husband. When I went to her house, she didn't say this yesterday, but when I went to her house, her husband sat on the other side of the table like this. And within 10 minutes I had him sitting beside me and really interested.
The body language changes.
Absolutely, yeah. In the following June they got a substantial tax check, and her husband said to her, I want you to go and pay Carolyn $1,000, which she did. So, there you go.
Nice.
And Sam, what are you? I notice your prices are about to move.
They are, yes. So currently they are similar to Caroline's, $499 setup fee and then $99 a month for a minimum of 6 months. I actually do the same. I call them or email them after the 6 months, and I actually think it's a success if they don't want me after that, because they generally say, you've taught me all I need, and with the X My Budgets clients, they just want to go on. And I still keep in touch with them, just less regularly, because, you know, we're saying about the time thing. So I think some clients take forever to sort out, and some just takes 2 seconds. So I'm happy to spend an hour with them in 6 months if they, you know, I'm not going to charge them for that. So, but I do have clients that go on beyond. All of them keep the software, because as we know, it's awesome.
Yep.
So I have the normal fee, like $599, and they can pay that all up front, all monthly, over the 6 months. But that's going up in February. And I've also, the amount of people that said to me, I don't need help with my budgeting, but I really want to use the software. And rather than just give them access, I do a thing where I say, it's $249, so it's $49 for a demonstration, and I literally just show them very basically what it is, very basic, and then if they want to sign up, they give me the other $200, and then they've got 3 months access to asking me questions and stuff. They get no guidance, no accountability, no nothing, no nice friendly emails, and that's half price, that's half my price, it's be $500 for that in thing, and I've got a few clients on that.
Because I came out on Facebook the other week, there was somebody who had an ex-Simply Budget, or a Simply Budget customer who wanted access to the new software.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I'm not allowed to do that. Of course you're allowed to do that. Mm. Offer them a package like that.
I actually have a similar package to that, because one of the people that came to my workshop said they were both on good incomes, had their money sorted, they were really, you know, really good with their money, but they wanted a good program. Right, and so I said to them, okay, I'll come out, I'll demonstrate the software, I'll give you 3-hour sessions, and it'll cost $300. And they went with that, and we did that, and they're off and running. Yeah. So, yep.
All right, that gives you some ideas. How to speak personally to people who have been referred to me in the first phone conversation. So someone's been referred, you've been given up, you know, here's someone you need to talk to, you ring them up, and you've got to break the ice and hopefully help them. How does that conversation look?
Okay, I'll often get phone calls from mortgage broker financial planner saying, hey, I've given your name to John Smith, I want you to give him a call. And so I'll ring John and I'll say, hey John, it's Carolyn, I'm Carolyn Mers, I'm a spending planner, da-da-da has referred, given me your name regarding spending planning services, and he'll go, oh yeah, Carolyn, that's good, blah, 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 you know, and I say, okay, so we need to make an appointment, obviously, to have a chat, when would you like to do that? I've got these times free next week, blah, 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 and we go from there. So it's pretty simple.
Just that simple.
Yeah.
Yep. One thing I accidentally learned, when that was exactly where I was at when I started, I had two mortgage brokers who would ring me, I've had these clients in, I've told them all about you, they're expecting a call.
Yeah.
And probably 1 in 4, when I called them, I got this really cold, like, what are you doing calling me kind of response. And just because I'm a polite kind of person, I don't like offending anybody, I would immediately back off and say, oh, look, really sorry to have phoned up and, you know, didn't mean to annoy you.
you know, Fred, the mortgage broker, just gave me a number and said that maybe I could help. And I was just, you know, I've got lots of other calls to make, but I just thought, well, he's given me your details, so I'll give him a courtesy call. But if you're not interested, you know, what we do is we fix people's money problems, but it's okay, you know, throw in a little commercial as to what we do. But if you're not interested, that's fine. And I, every time I did that, they went, oh, well, we might as well have to get the meeting, take it away.
It's how you handle it.
But some of them I found that some people are really, which is why I like to have face-to-face meetings with people, because some people on the phone are really off-putting. Off-putting, you know. I had one like that, and this lady, I got off the phone and I thought, wow, you're just rude and horrible and I don't think I like you. And yet when I met her, and she's now a client of mine, she's lovely. But just on the phone, she just doesn't have a phone presence at all. And she said to me since then, oh, I hate talking to people on the phone. You know? So it's really, so you can't even, you can be put off by that, but it might have nothing to do with you and everything about their fear of being on the phone or whatever, you know. So.
And if you've got them in the appointment, I think having your coffee, and that's what you're there to chat about, you can dance around it, you know, as much as you like, but you're there. But on the phone, you might have got her a bad time. She might have just, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, you have no idea.
Be in a bad mood, or she might have just had a massive argument.
Can I just ask quickly, you made an appointment, you meet in a coffee shop. How do you broach? How do you launch off?
In the coffee shop?
Yeah.
Well, I personally...
That's the proper appointment, isn't it? Not the phone call where you made the appointment.
Yeah. I will, like, talk about everything else but the budget or spending plan or whatever. I'll say how you're going, rah, rah. And then if it's obvious they're not going to raise the subject, I'll just go, so, you know, what made you call? You know, what made you... What's happening? What made you contact me? Mm-hmm. And then when they start spilling their guts and telling you the story, I just make sure that I don't judge, I don't like go flipping out. You know, even though I'm thinking it. So when the client, you know, like one of my first clients, it was a single mum, she had 3 jobs and 4 credit cards, and she'd maxed out all 4 credit cards, $20,000 on each one. And she purposely said one, and then she goes, I haven't finished yet. And I was going, it's fine, like this is the worst it will ever be, just tell me. You know, she was crying and she's going, there's 2, and then when she went 4, and there's 4, and I was going, it's a 5, like, and she's going, no, there's not 5. So we numbered them.
That's great.
Yeah, woo! Yeah, so, yeah, do you know what I mean? And then we went through everything else, and, you know, and it's just, you know, so it's, you just have to read them, I think, and, but at the beginning, I don't go, right, tell me about your budget, you know, I talk about the weather, if they've got a kid with them, and just ask general stuff, so that they go, oh, and then we have a laugh and a giggle, and then they'll go, anyway, I asked you here because of this. But if they don't, I'll just say, so, you know, what made you, or where did you find me, or, you know, what can I do for you? Tell me what I can do. Or one of my big questions, which I learned at Lifeline, answering the phone at Lifeline, is if there's one thing I could do for you right now, what would it be? It's a really, really good question to ask anybody, no matter what help they're after, money, whatever.
Have you got 80 grand?
Hey, she's paying them down.
No, but I have a really good system that can help. <Yeah.
laughs> All right, one more question. Or are we all good? Cool. Okay, there was one other question. Thank you, ladies. That was actually...
Oh, sorry, I do have one more question.
Oh, come on, Anthea. Oh, come on, then.
It's just with that one with the four credit card debts and whatever.
Yeah.
And for all of you. I guess you work out in the conversation with they can afford your fees.
Yeah.
That's kind of my question about, do you give them a discount? Do you, I don't know. I guess you just work that out in the conversation.
Well, for me, I mean, the idea is that you take them on and they pay the setup fee. That's ideal scenario.